Hey, just before I get started, a couple things I just want to inform you of. First of all, if you're a guest with us, we are so glad you're here today hanging out. My name is Mike. We're Genesis Church, a church that started on Easter Sunday this year, and we're excited just about how God is using us just to be a little bit different incarnation of the church here in Eureka, and we just pray that God will touch your life this morning and that you'll hear him speak. For whether you're new today or you've been around forever, I just want to kind of let you know something that's coming up in 2 weeks. 2 weeks from today, we're going to have a core meeting, which is a meeting for anybody who's kind of plugged into Genesis on any level to kind of cast a vision and let you know it's going to happen for the next, 3 to 6 months. And it'll be time to kind of hear the dream for what's going on, kind of find out how you can get plugged into some things, those sort of activities. And so we hope that you'll be able to attend. We'll just right after the service, we'll go over to the Commons. We'll have lunch for you. Lunch will be provided. If you have kids, the kids can come eat lunch, and then we'll send them back to hang out while we do the meeting. We'll be done by 1 o'clock. And so that's in your worship folder this morning if you want to check it out and find out any more information. But I just wanted to kind of tell you about that. I don't know, do you do your resolutions? I was reading an article that said they're down about 50%. About 5 years ago, they did a study, and around 82% of people made New Year's resolutions. It's down to about 54%. People are just, I think, kind of tired of struggling, making these promises to themselves, and they realize they can't keep it. I also think people are coming to the point where maybe they just say, the heck with it. I just making these promises myself don't work, and I'm just going to kind of Katie bar the doors and just live however it works for me and those sort of things. I don't know. I've found in my life that I've had New Year's resolutions. For example, in 2003, I made a New Year's resolution that I was going to read 20 books. In 2004, I made a resolution that I was going to read 10 books. In 2005, I made a resolution that I was going to read 5 books. In 2006, I made a resolution that I'm going to get through a few newspaper articles. And in 2007, my resolution for this year is that I'm at least going to read the comics. Are you with me on that? In 2004, I made a resolution that I was going to lose 50 pounds. 2005, I said I was going to lose 25 pounds. 2006, I made a promise that I would eat healthy. 2000, and eat healthy and exercise. My resolution for 2007 is that I'm at least going to drive by the gym once a week, that's kind of where I'm at. New Year's resolutions can be a hard thing because we kind of feel like if we just promise ourselves and buckle down and work harder, things will get better in my life. And we all have issues. I do, you do. We all have areas we struggle. Up here on the stage are all kinds of images of things that we're going to be talking about for the next few weeks. Because where we're going for the month of January, I feel like January is a great time for us to say, hey, it's a fresh start. It's a new year. But I think sometimes that the way we go about it may be it may take us away from what really the gospel is. And we make promises to ourselves for self-improvement. And I want to tell you that as I talk about all those things, I'm not saying that there's really anything wrong with that. I think it's healthy to say, listen, I'm not exercising. I need to do that. Or I've got struggles in my life. Or I'm going to make a commitment to myself to do some things better. But here's the thing that I want you to understand. Those attempts at self-help really never, ever totally work. And the reason is because we're going to tend to run to one of two places when those things happen. Either I'm going to keep my resolutions. I'm going to feel good about myself, and I'm going to get on the treadmill, or I'm going to quit smoking or dipping, or I'm going to deal with the issues in my life, and I'm going to feel better about myself. And then all of a sudden, what's going to happen is I'm going to start feeling prideful and feeling, this is working. I'm okay. And I'm going to start feeling that I'm better than everybody else. Do you do that? For example, if I'm going through a phase where I'm eating chicken, I don't ever, I'll sit at a table and I'll be eating chicken and a dry baked potato. It doesn't matter that I'm pounds. What will happen is I will look at people who are skinny across the aisle from me eating a steak, and I'll be like, well, those people aren't eating healthy. Well, wow, I'm self-righteous. I feel like I'm better than everybody else just because for that day, I'm doing better on a diet or I'm keeping a New Year's resolution. And so for some of us, we're kind of drawn to rules and ideas and legalism. kind of drawn to this place where if I just know a list of things that I can keep, and if I keep that list, I feel like I'm okay. And if I feel like I'm okay, if I'm keeping the list, if I'm just doing this sort of list that I've made for myself, I can look at myself and feel accepted and feel like I'm okay with myself, and I can look down my nose at other people because I am keeping the list that I've made for myself. On the other hand, some of us may be more like my, you know, the resolutions I read a minute ago, where what happens is I make this list of things that I'm going to do for myself, and I totally fail. And I live in the failure, and I become okay with the fact that in my life, there are areas of my life that I know are not the way that I want them to be, and maybe even the way that God wants them to be. But I come to the point where I just kind of throw up my hands and say, well, forget it, I can't do it, and blow it off. And in the middle of this, what I hope to do over the next 4 weeks is talk to you about Jesus and the gospel. Because I really do believe that every person in here, every day we need a new beginning. We need a fresh start. We named our church Genesis Church because we just thought the name was captivating, in that Genesis is the book of beginnings, and it is a place for a fresh start, a new start. 2 Corinthians 5:17 says, if anyone's in Christ, he's a new creation. The old is gone, the new has come. The idea that, hey, listen, you have a new beginning in Jesus. And what I want to do, what I'm hoping to do over the next 4 weeks is we talk about, you know, New Year's resolutions. We're going to deal with the different areas that I think most people have resolutions in. What I hope to do is show you stories from the Bible where people met Jesus face to face. They had these encounters with Jesus, the living God who came in flesh and dwelled among us, who became a man. God became a man, and Jesus, these people met Jesus. And when they met him, the struggles that they had, the things that they may have made resolutions on, the things that they felt like, I'm going to do better with my life, that they just failed miserably, I want to show you how Jesus touched their lives and changed them from the inside out when they couldn't do it for themselves. And in the heart of this, I want to share with you the good news of Jesus. Now, here's the tendency. If you're a follower of Jesus, what you'll do is you'll kind of check out and say, oh, well, I know what it means to trust Jesus and follow him. I did that when I was 7 or when I was 15 or when I was 12 or whenever. And I want to get us beyond that, beyond an event of, oh, I am now a follower of Jesus, to the fact that what it means to trust the gospel is a life-changing, ongoing relationship with your Creator through his Son, Jesus, that is changing you every single day. If you're kind of somebody who's seeking, who's like trying to figure out, you know, I don't know about God, I don't know about Jesus, I'm just trying to find out what it means to trust him, and if this is something I really want to do, I want to show you how keeping a list and following the rules and all those things leave us short. But if you will just find Christ, if you'll just find him and trust him, he can change you when nothing else in your own life can. And that's kind of where I hope to go. Because the gospel, I believe, is something that is incredible. Here's what, just in a nutshell, let me tell you what the gospel is. The gospel teaches me that Jesus did for me what I couldn't do for myself. When Jesus died on the cross and gave his life for you and for me, you and I could not find a way to justify ourselves, to make ourselves right with God, and even to deal with our own struggles. New Year's resolutions ultimately are things that promises we make that where we evaluate ourselves and look at ourselves and say, somehow I'm going to be better. But the problem is that I never really get there. And if I do get there, then I start, you know, well, look at me. I'm somebody now. I've got this figured out. And I puff up with pride, which is, that was the sin of the devil that got him kicked out of heaven. You know, pride is like the worst sin in the Bible. When I feel like, hey, I am somebody, and God's got to take me because I'm keeping the list, that really is the same sin that the devil did and got him kicked out of heaven. And so, the Bible teaches the gospels that Jesus did for me what I couldn't do for myself. A second thing is that the gospel teaches me that Jesus does in me what I can't do for myself. See, Jesus paid for my sin, and he made me right with God, but he also is working in me and changing me from the inside out. And that is a process. Nobody ever arrives. But see, the gospel doesn't say, oh, I'm going to make a list, I'm going to keep it for God, and I'm going to be better. The gospel says, I follow Jesus and trust him. And as I do that, what happens is that Jesus changes me from the inside out. And he does in me what I can't do for myself. I make resolutions. I can't tell you the number of times I woke up and said, today's the day I'm going to start dieting. And by, you know, breakfast, it's over. You know, the biscuits and gravy there, or the coffee cake. And it's like, okay, tomorrow is the day that I'm going to start. Are you there with me? You know, are y'all out there? Do you, I mean, maybe I'm the only one here this morning that gets what I'm talking about. But I, for me, this is my life. You know, for a long time, I was like not going to talk about this. And then I realized, I think my son's working in kids ministry. Is that right? Is he in here? Okay. Well, it's not a big deal. But for a long time, I actually used to dip Skol. Now, I know that will like totally freak some of you out. I can't tell you that. By the grace of God, I kept making rules. I'm going to quit this. I'm going to quit this. I'm going to quit this. And what happened is over a period of time, I couldn't do it. I can't tell you the number of times I would buy a can, take a chew, and then throw the can out the window, disgusted with myself. Half an hour later, reach my pockets, realize I got no money, and drive back to the spot where I threw the can out to go find, you know, and I'm searching on the side of the road. How pathetic is that? That is the way, we are wired this way. And then for a while, if I'd overcome it, like I said, I would look at people, oh, look at those people who have a problem with that. Oh, you know, I'm better than they are because I overcame it. Those are the two extremes. And this is what I want you to see. The gospel cuts right through the middle and calls us to Jesus. And I'm hoping to show you how the different resolutions, whether it's with my failures, whether it's the resolutions about my relationships, whether it's the resolutions about religion, whether it's resolutions about my finances, whatever it is. And those are the four areas we're really going to look at specifically. But in the midst of all these, the gospel will change me when I can't change myself, but it will leave me realizing I didn't do it. I look at that issue in my life, and I'll be honest, I had nothing to do with overcoming struggles. It was Christ in me that became what I couldn't do for myself. And the last thing is that the gospel does through me what I can't do for others. As Christ changes me, then I become a conduit of what he is in me to other people. And that's what the gospel always does. It's not I work and I keep a list and I try harder and I'm better. It is that I trust Jesus and he changes me from the inside out to be what I can't be. And then that really gets in the lives of other people. And this morning, I want to talk to you or just share with you about struggling with the issue of failure. Areas where, you know, like what I just showed you. I mean, we got the treadmill up here and we got the, you know, the cigarette box. And I mean, good grief, this is a great drying rack for towels. Do you know that? I mean, how many of you have bought a piece? This thing is so dusty, it's not even funny, you know. How many of you have bought a piece of exercise equipment at some point in time? You bought one of those, you know, little elliptical things or, you know, I love that, you know, they come out with something new. And January is the time. They sell more of this stuff in January than any time of the year. And by February, you're like, hey, you know, I can hang my towel on that and it'll be dry tomorrow morning because it's not getting used for anything else. I used to work out at the Point. And which is a place in Baldwin, a big exercise facility, a community center. And January used to really tick me off. Because actually, believe it or not, you know, I know that, you know, I have the body of a god, Buddha, and that, you know, but I do exercise. That's the one thing, you know, I do one sit-up a day. It starts when I wake up out of bed and it ends when I go back to bed. No, I'm kidding. I actually like exercising and working out. And I used to go to the Point and I'd hang out at the Point. And exorcist. I hated January because in January, no matter what time of day you went, there were 1,000 people in there, you know? And, you know, they're on their new sweatsuits that they got for Christmas, ready to exercise. By the end of January, you go in there, nobody there. It's just the way it was, you know? And so you just kind of endure January. The rest of the year, you had the place to yourself. That's the life that kind of we live in. And we fail. We make these promises to ourselves. I'm going to be better. I'm going to quit smoking. I'm going to quit drinking. I'm going to exercise. I'm going to get healthy. I'm going to be more dependable, whatever it is. And then all of a sudden, we are wrestling with the fact that promise that I made to myself, I fail miserably at it. How do you deal with that? Not just in New Year's resolutions. How do you wrestle with that in all of life? How do you deal with the fact that really on the inside of me, the things that I promise myself, I guarantee myself I'm going to do, I don't pull them off? And wrestle with when I fail, what does that mean for me? What does that mean for me and myself? Ultimately, more important, what does that mean for me and my Creator? And this morning, I want to look at a story. Story of a guy that if you've been around Christianity or around church a whole lot, you've heard the guy's name. You know who Peter is. You know that he is looked up to as kind of one of the benchmarks, one of the foundation stones of the early church, that he was a guy who God used in great ways. But I want to look at his failure and how this guy ended up messing up big time. And how Jesus restored him. And in the midst of that, my hope is that you will see yourself in this story in different ways. And as you wrestle with how Peter failed and how Peter messed up and how Jesus touched the life of Peter, that you will, in your own life, be challenged that I don't need to make promises that I can't keep. I just need to focus my eyes on Jesus and let him change me from the inside out. That's the gospel. It's not a formula. Now, I'm going to tell you three things this morning, but I want to tell you there's no, hey, if you do A, B, and C, it's all going to work out. It doesn't. It is a dynamic relationship with your Creator through his son, Jesus, where he changes you every day. Just a little bit. For some people, there's a drastic change in areas of life. Boom. Christ touches their life, and they walk away from stuff, and they know it was Jesus. They don't have pride. God changes their life. For most of us, that change is a gradual day-by-day transformation, walking with Jesus and being changed by him. That's what the gospel is all about. And so in the life of Peter, we're going to look at this. If you have your Bibles, we're going to look over at John chapter 21. If you don't have a Bible with you, at the end of your row there, we have a lot of Bibles. We'd love for you to just take one of those, pass it down. If you're on the end of a row, just take them and go ahead and pass them to the people in the row. On that Bible, we will be on page 776 if you're in one of our Bibles. And if you don't have a Bible that's yours, we'd love for you to keep that one, take it home. Or if you have a friend that you'd like to give a Bible to, those are there for that reason. Take them, give them to friends, take it for yourself. If you have a Bible at home that you have a hard time understanding, this is a newer translation than some of them that's just really easy to read. And so that's for you. Use it this morning, take it home with you. But we'll be on page 776 in that Bible, and we're going to be looking at this guy, Peter, and how Jesus touched his life after a time of just miserable failure. And so chapter 21, we'll begin with verse 1. It says, "And Jesus revealed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias, and he revealed himself in this way." Now, let me explain what's going on here. It says Jesus revealed himself. Jesus, just a few days earlier, went through the cross. Just a few days earlier, Jesus had died. He was executed by Roman soldiers at the hands of the request of the Jews, and he died on a cross, and he did that for you and for me. And his disciples, they had followed him for 3 years. They were totally distraught, totally broken. They had lost their leader. They had invested 3 years of their lives in following this guy, and then he's dead. But 3 days later, Jesus did something that nobody else had ever done. He came out of the grave and he overcame death, hell, and the grave. He was victorious, and his disciples now had seen him twice. This is the third time that they saw Jesus after his resurrection. That's what's going on. It says he revealed himself in this way. Simon Peter, Thomas called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, and the sons of Zebedee, and two other of his disciples were together. Simon Peter said to them, "I am going fishing." And they said to him, We will go with you. And they went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. All right. If you're gonna get this story, you gotta know Peter from the start. I picture Peter as kind of this big, rough guy who always smells like fish because he's a fisherman, you know, he's, you know, burly. Now, I don't know if that's really what he looked like. It's just kind of the image I have as this rough and ready guy but the thing about Peter, and I connect with Peter so much, he is rambunctious. He is always speaking and engaging his mouth before his brain is moving. And this is kind of his life. And Peter is this fisherman. And one day he's hanging out. This is three years before this event. Peter is with his brother and his two best friends, and they are fishing. This is their job. They're on this big sea, this big lake, and they are fishing using nets and catching fish that they will sell on the market and make their living. And they went out all night long, and they went fishing. And as they went out all night long and went fishing, they caught nothing. They had a terrible night, couldn't find them. They tried all the possible baits and all the possible ideas that they could use. And, you know, there was no Bill Dance videos going on. There was no, you know, ESPN Outdoors. You know, it just was a horrible night. If they would have videotaped it, they would have ditched the reel because it was useless. They caught nothing. And They're coming back in shore in the morning, and they're kind of tending their nets, getting everything ready and putting it back in the boat where it's nice and neat and ready to go. And as they're doing that, Jesus is teaching. He walks up by the shore and says, "Hey, guys, cast your nets over there. Go out into the deep part of the lake and just throw your nets out one more time." They'd been fishing all night. These guys were professional fishermen. Morning time, once the sun comes up, the fish kind of go to the deep parts of the water. You're not going to catch fish. And in their mind, I can see them looking at Jesus going, "Dude, you're a carpenter. You're not a fisherman. We're not following your advice. Not a good idea. We're tired. We're ready to go to bed. Just let us finish getting our nets ready." But they said, "You know, Jesus, if you said that, we'll try it." And so they go out and they throw their nets out, and they had this huge, just massive fish catch. And the Bible tells us that here they began to pull the nets in, and as they were pulling the nets in, literally their nets began to break. And they were trying to flip fish in, and Peter looks at Jesus on the shoreline, and he goes, "Who are you?" And then he says, "I know this. There's no way I'm worthy to be in your presence." And he's overwhelmed at the presence of this man who could tell him to throw the nets over here, and they had the biggest catch of their life. And as this is going on, Jesus looks at him, and he gives him a commission. It's a really cool thing. He says, "Listen, if you will follow me, I'll make you fishers of men. I'll change your life, and you'll make a difference. You won't just catch fish. You will now make a difference for all of eternity for God's kingdom." And what happened is that Peter, Andrew, James, and John, these four guys, dropped their nets, left their fish, told their dad, "Hey, we had a good catch. You're going to have to go deal with it. We're following Jesus." And they left everything. And for the next 3 years, they followed Jesus. They just gave up everything to live their lives with this guy who taught them, who showed them God, who led them. They saw all kinds of miracles, all kinds of great stuff. And this is who he was. Okay? And at this time, Peter's name was actually Simon. That's his birth name. Simon was his birth name. But on one day, Jesus is having a conversation, and he asks all his disciples, "Who does everybody think that I am?" And Simon gave the right, "You're the Christ. You're the Son of the living God. You're the one that God has promised." And as a result of that, Jesus looks at Simon, and he says, "I'm going to give you a new name. Instead of being Simon, I'm going to call you Peter," which means rock. You know, it's kind of like the Rock, the wrestler. You know, you're no longer Simon. You are the Rock. And the funny thing was that you look at Peter's life in the first four books of the New Testament, he never looks like the Rock. He's this kind of goober who is falling over himself, making all kinds of mistakes, putting his foot in his mouth, saying the wrong thing at the wrong time. That's kind of his life. And a lot of people will say, well, what Jesus was doing, Jesus was looking at Peter and gave him a new name because that he saw the potential in Peter to become something great. Wrong answer. Jesus changed his name to Peter, not because he saw potential in Peter to be great. Jesus changed his name to Peter because the gospel was going to change Simon to Peter. This guy who failed all the time. The night before Jesus was executed, he looked at Peter and he said, "Dude, you're going to deny me." And Peter said, "I will not." He said, "Before the rooster crows tomorrow morning, at least three times you are going to deny that you know me." Peter said, "I will go to my grave before I do that." The night goes on. Jesus is arrested. They end up inside the court of the high priest. And this trial is going on where they're trying Jesus. And now Peter is inside this, kind of checking things out. And in John chapter 18, it says he walked up to this charcoal fire. And he's kind of warming himself around it. And people start asking him, "Wait a minute, I know you. You were hanging out with Jesus." And Peter says, "Man, I don't know who Jesus is." And another person says, hold on. "When Jesus was doing all these miracles and stuff, you were always with him. I know you. You have got to be one of his followers." And Peter says, "I am not." Second time he denies him. "I am not one of his followers." And finally, a little girl walks up and says, "Listen, I've been to things. You were there. You are one of Jesus' followers." And the Bible tells us that Peter cursed Jesus. Basically what he said is, "I don't know that blankety blank guy. Leave me alone." And right at that point, he heard a rooster crow. And Jesus walks out from his trial, looks Peter right in the eye. And Peter's heart is just broken over his failure. over the fact that he had made a promise that he said, I'm not going to fail you, Jesus. I'm going to be there. But when it came down to it, when the rubber hit the road, when things got tough, Peter just caved in and folded. And so for the next 3 days, for Peter, it's not just that his Savior had died. It's that the last time he looked Jesus in the eye, it was the eyes of disappointment who looked right through his eyes into his heart and realized that he had utterly failed. It's something that Peter had promised he was going to do. And that this guy who had followed Jesus for 3 years, when it was time to stand for him, he totally caved, totally failed. I understand Peter's struggle here. I know there's been times where I've said, you know, Jesus, I'm going to make it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to be better for you. Only to, by the end of that day, realize that my failures are huge. And I can't overcome who I am. And so this is where Peter lived for the 3 days after that. And even when he started seeing Jesus resurrected, I think he was excited because of the victory that, oh my gosh, he's alive. But the guilt had to haunt him. And so here's what goes on. Peter says, let's go fishing. We read that and think, hey, let's go get in a little bass boat, go out and have a good morning on the lake. But that's not really all that's going on here. Here's what Peter's saying. Peter is saying, in my life, I gave 3 years of my life following Jesus. And I thought I could be better. I thought I could be different. I thought I could be somebody who kept my rules and followed Jesus and pleased him and did everything I was supposed to. Man, my heart is pumped that Jesus is alive, but I realize that I cannot live this life. I'm going back to my old way of life. I'm going fishing. I'm going back to the way I used to live before I met Jesus. I just cannot be all that I'm supposed to be. Let's go fishing. That's what's going on here. And so Peter takes a bunch of guys and they go back fishing. It's a crazy story. It's where I am when I have issues in life that I wake up in the morning and I pray and I say, all right, Jesus, I'm going to do my best today to overcome this. And by noon, I don't make it. And so by late afternoon, I'm going, forget it. I just can't be the person I think I'm supposed to be. It's the way I feel when I have a relationship with somebody and I try to forgive them. But once I get in the middle of things, I just the more I try, the more I despise. And I just kind of just say, well, I just can't do it. Forget it. This is where Peter is. And this is where the story where Jesus meets him, what takes place here is that Jesus begins restoring him, reaching out to him and drawing him back. And that's kind of where I want to live for the rest of this morning. I want you to see how Jesus reaches into his life and draws him back. Verse 4, just as day was breaking, Jesus stood on the shore. His disciples did not know that it was Jesus. And Jesus said to them, children, do you have any fish? And they answered him, no. He said to them, cast the net on the right side of the boat and you will find some. So they cast it, and now they were not able to haul it in because of the quantity of fish. Do you see something similar here? The same thing's happening. When Jesus called these guys for the first time, the same thing is happening a second time. He says, listen, throw your nets on the right side. And they threw them down, and all of a sudden it's like every sea in the lake started going, hey, net, woohoo, fun, let's swim there. And they all swam into their nets, and now they had these huge nets. But there's something different. They began to pull them up, and it says that their nets didn't break. They weren't able to haul it in, but this time their nets didn't break. And so verse 7, the disciple whom Jesus loved therefore said to Peter, it is the Lord. John, who wrote this book, said, it's Jesus. That's who it is. I get it now. It's the guy we followed. We've seen this event before. That's who it is. And Peter, I love this. Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord. He put on his outer garment, for he was stripped for work, and threw himself into the sea. Peter looks and goes, Jesus. And instead of running from him this time, instead of saying, I don't deserve you, he still knows that. But this time he just wants to be with Jesus. He leaves the other guys in the boat to pull the nets in. I mean, they're sitting here going, we can't get this net in. And Peter goes, Jesus, throws on his coat and jumps in the water. And he is now swimming to Jesus. And the other guys are going, dude, fish, where are you going? We all want to see Jesus. Come back here. But he swims over to Jesus. They cannot get the net in the boat. And they drag this net. They just start, you know, they get the sail up and one guy's rowing over here while the other guy's holding the fish. And they literally drag the boat over to the shore. They pull the boat up on the seashore and dump the fish out. They can't get it in the boat. Peter's over there looking at Jesus going, I can't believe it's you. Verse 9, when they got on land, they saw a charcoal fire in place with fish laid out on it and bread. Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish that you've just caught. So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore full of large fish, 153 of them. And although there were so many, the net was not torn. 153 fish. Now, the funny thing is, all through church history, people have been trying to say, what does that number 153 mean? It's a symbolic number, meaning the completion of... they caught 153 big fish. Like one day I went bluegill fishing with a couple of my relatives. We were in this boat that was, like 12 feet long. There were three of us, and there was like only this much space between the top of the boat and where the water was. If we'd have moved just the wrong way, we would have flipped the boat. We found this bed. We started fishing. In an hour and 15 minutes, we caught 99 bluegill. Now, why do I know that number? That was 15 years ago. Why do I know that number? This is the most fish I ever caught. What's going on here? They say, man, we caught 153 fish. One net, one time. That's never happened. They knew exactly how many. It was miraculous. They knew that something incredible was going on here. And so they walk up and there's a charcoal fire burning. There's an interaction between Jesus and his disciples as he says, bring some of the fish over here. We're going to cook them. And here's the crazy thing. In all of the Bible, there's only a charcoal fire mentioned twice. The first time is when Peter was standing in the court of the Pharisees. And he walks up to a charcoal fire. And that is where Peter betrayed Jesus. The second time it happens, Jesus is cooking on a charcoal fire. Don't miss the symbolism there. Jesus is calling Peter right back to the point where he failed. And this is what happens in that interaction. Verse 15. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, feed my lambs. Said to him a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, tend my sheep. Said to him a third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. Truly, truly, I say to you that when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and you will dress. Another will dress you and carry you to where you do not want to go. This he said to show the kind of death he was to glorify God. And after saying this, he said to him, follow me. What a great story. The restoration of Peter. Peter failed three times. How many times does Jesus look at him and say, do you love me? Three times. Something's going on here. This is what I want you to see. When Peter could not change himself, when Peter could not overcome his own failure, when Peter had decided to go fishing and give up, when Peter had said, I just can't do this, I can't keep my own rules, and I fail miserably, Jesus called him to a place where he changed him, and this is what I want you to see. There are three things that I want to point out this morning that Jesus places in Peter in this encounter, that I believe that you and I, when we will follow Jesus and trust him, instead of keeping resolutions, instead of making a list for ourselves, just three things that I think Jesus will put into us if we would just focus on him and trust him and follow him. And the first one is this incredible love where he says that he's going to give him transforming love. He says, listen, Peter, do you love me? And Peter's kind of heartbroken. Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Peter, do you love me? Yes, Jesus, you know that I love you. Peter, do you love me? Three times he asks him. And I think the first thing we need to understand is that when I am struggling with failure, I don't need to go back and look at the list and try to figure out how to overcome failure. I need to realize that what Christ needs to put in me is a transforming love for Jesus, for himself. Notice that Jesus didn't say, Peter, do you love me? Well, then what the heck's wrong with you? How could you have blown it so bad? I can't believe when I walked, I told you were going to fail me and you did it. That's not what he says. He just says, Peter, do you love me? Do you love me enough? And then he says, what he really says is, do you love me more than these? The these could have been a lot of things, but what I think is, I think he pointed to the fish. He says, listen, here's your old way of life. You had a great day. Do you love me more than these? And see, that's where I think transforming love, what takes place is that I can't overcome the struggles in my life. I can't keep my promises. I can't keep my rules. I can't overcome my struggles. And what God does, the Bible tells us in the book of 1 John that we love because he first loved us. And as I trust myself to Jesus and I give him my life and I follow him, what he does is he, on the inside of me, he gives me this love for him that I can't give myself. I can't conjure up on my own. But then when I struggle, the truth of the matter is that my struggles really reflect the problem with my love for Jesus. And so he works in my life and he doesn't call me to list keeping or to rebellion. He calls me to love him. And as I love Jesus, he changes me from the inside out. Everything in this story cries out forgiveness. That Jesus was giving forgiveness to Peter. That he was restoring him. But the question he asks is, do you love me? And that's the question that you got to wrestle with. As you're wrestling with failure and you're wrestling with whatever it is, you know, if it's struggling with, a sin issue or a pride issue or whatever it is, do you love Jesus more than these? That's where I've got to wrestle with it. And see, that love comes out. We got to make sure it is the type of love that just says, I love you, Jesus, and I will follow you. Here's the deal. In my relationship with my wife, and this is a great place to go back when we talk about love, because marriage is a picture of this. And in my relationship with my wife, I've got to be careful that I don't express my love in one of two ways. For example, if I were to stand on a platform, you know, and when I got married, and I looked her in the eye, and in my vows, I would have said, I love you, I will cherish you, and hold on to you 360 days a year. But 5 days out of your mind, I can go hang out and do whatever I want to. 360 days a year, honey, I am totally yours. Those other five are mine. I don't think my wife would have gone through with that. I think she would look at me and be like, no, that's not going to work out for us. It needs to be a full 365. But so often in my life, that's kind of my attitude towards God. All right, God, I will give you these days and I will love you on those days. But on the other days of the week or the other days of my life, I'm going to have a few days reserved for myself. I'm going to have a few things reserved for myself. And those things are mine. I don't really want to show my love through those things. I want to show my love through these things. And Jesus looks at me and says, Mike, do you love me? Another thing that I could do that would really mess things up is come home on our anniversary and I've bought flowers, candy, a lot of good stuff. And I walk up and say, this is for you. And she would look at me and laugh because she doesn't like flowers or candy, but it just play with me, all right, pretend. She would look and be so moved by the thoughtfulness and by how I really remembered the date of our anniversary. Guys, that's a good thing. And I went out and I really thought through what I was going to do to make her feel loved. And as I handed it to her, she goes, Mike, that is so thoughtful. And I look at her and go, oh, sweetie, that's great. That's my duty. All you women are cringing, going, if my husband ever says that to me, I'm throwing the flowers at him. I'll eat the candy, but I'm throwing the flowers at him. Because if I express my love as a form of duty, it's not love. And see, either I will run to the place where I'll say, all right, Jesus, 360 of 365 days a year is the other five are mine. Or I will say, all right, Jesus, I will keep the list because that's my duty. And what Jesus is looking at us and saying is, listen, do you love me? And if you're struggling with an area, don't focus on the area that you're struggling. Learn to love Jesus. Pray. Say, Jesus, place your love in my life. That's the first thing, transforming love. The second thing is transforming mission. What he says when he looks at Peter, he says, listen, do you love me? Do you love me more than these? And Peter says, yes. And then he says, feed my sheep, tend to my sheep, feed my lambs. Three times, all three times. Once again, he doesn't say, Peter, do you love me? Well, work harder at keeping my list. Peter, do you love me? Well, keep the Ten Commandments, by gosh. Do you love me? Would you quit smoking and drinking? No, he says, do you love me? Yes. Then live missionally. Live in such a way that your life shows who you serve. Tend my sheep, feed my lambs. And I think this is maybe the biggest thing for me. I think that if I focus on my failure, I can make it better. And what Jesus says to me is, don't focus on your failure. Focus on living the mission I've called you to. Don't just get wrapped up. I got really kind of tickled as I looked at Time Magazine. Did you realize that you are Time Magazine's Person of the Year? Congratulations. I'm so proud of you. I mean, that's just amazing that we have such greatness here. Did you realize that? Time Magazine's Person of the Year was you. In fact, you can't really see it, but the original cover, this is last week, so I don't have the original one, had a little mirror on the middle of the big page, okay? And when you picked it up, it said, Time's Person of the Year, you, and you could look at yourself and be all excited. Woohoo! I am Time's Person of the Year. I am somebody. It's really fitting for this culture that, you know, we all are so excited about our own importance. And I like some of the responses. One guy said, I'd like to thank the editors of Time for choosing me as the person of the year. I promise my family and friends and coworkers that I will not let this title go to my head and that the wealth and fame it will undoubtedly bring me will be used only for greater good. I appreciate the flattering cover photo, although I believe that your stylist could have worked a bit harder to de-emphasize the rectangular lines on my face. I like this one from a guy in Virginia. He says, I respectfully decline Time's Person of the Year distinction. To paraphrase Groucho Marx, I don't want to be chosen by any magazine that would select me as its most newsworthy person. We like to live for me. And even, watch this, this is what I think. A lot of times when I make resolutions, it is not about Jesus, I really want my life to honor you. It's about, I just want to feel better about me. And what Jesus calls us to is not keeping a list and making, you know, being good enough. He calls us to live a life of mission that says, my life will reflect who I serve and who I follow, and it will make a difference in the lives of others. If you're struggling in an area of life, find a way to live the mission of Jesus. Go serve somebody. He will change you through that. He will place the transformation in you through a transforming mission. And the third thing is a transforming walk. He says, listen, do you love me? Yes. Feed my sheep. Okay. And oh, by the way, the end of your life is going to be pretty rough. Eventually, you are going to die in a way that will glorify me. And what he meant, actually what he was telling Peter is that it's going to be through a crucifixion. Peter lived his life not knowing when he was going to die, but he lived his life knowing how he was going to die because Jesus had told him. But he said, but follow me. It's the same words he used when he called him the first time. He said, listen, for 3 years, you walked with me, you talked with me, you lived with me, you found everything about me, and I know you failed, you messed up, and I know that's hard, but here's the thing, I want you to come back, trust me and follow me again. And sometimes when we're struggling, that's just what we need to hear is Jesus saying, just follow me. Don't make your list and try to go back and do it better. Follow me. Come back to a life-changing, life-altering, transforming relationship with Jesus. And that is the gospel. So if you're struggling, maybe you've made your New Year's resolutions. I didn't make them this year. I read them. I was actually teasing about those because I realized that if I made a New Year's resolution to stop eating, then New Year's Day we have a party. It's not even going to last till lunch, dang it. The call of Jesus is to be changed because Jesus will do the changing. Trust him. Follow him. Here's the thing about him. I don't think resolutions are all bad. But if you get prideful or if you just wallow in pity because of failure, they've missed the point. Trust Jesus. Give your life to him. He will change you when you can't change yourself. It may be a long process for some people. But you just give your life to him and follow him. Some of you here today, and you are actually a follower of Jesus, and you get this. And you're like, you know, I understand the ups and downs, but I am struggling. And I just want to let you know that he calls you to himself. He will bring you right back to the charcoal fire. He will warm his hands around you. He will show you the love of God, and you can trust him, and he will put his love in your heart. He will give you his mission. He will call you to follow him, and you can trust him. Some of you are here today and you understand the failure, but you've never met the goodness of Jesus for the first time. And I just want to tell you that you can experience just incredible peace and purpose in life when you trust Christ. The story of Peter goes on like this. About between 30 and 40 days after this event, Peter goes back into Jerusalem and stands in front of thousands of people and preaches the first Christian sermon. 5,000 people followed Jesus because of the sermon of Peter. This guy who would not honor Jesus at a charcoal fire and denied him three times, failed miserably. 30 to 40 days later, preaches, and 5,000 people say, whatever it is you got, I want it. Peter goes on to be a leader in the early church. Great things happen through his life. But I want to tell you, he still struggles. He struggled with racism. And there are times in the Bible brings this out in other places, where he still struggles when he is in a group of people that he wants their approval. He never arose. It wasn't like this day is over, a halo went on his head, woohoo, I won't ever mess up again. He failed again. But he never forgot the call of Jesus. Do you love me? Feed my sheep. Follow me. That's the transforming gospel. Jesus, we love you today. We praise you. I just ask that even as we're here this morning, there's probably people who are here who are struggling with failure, who they realize that their lives, they've made promises to you and promises to themselves. And even already in January, they feel like they can't get a new beginning, a fresh start. And I just pray that you'll work in their lives, you'll work in my life in this area, but you will help me to realize that I am accepted because of your grace, that you died on the cross to pay the penalty for my sin, and that if I will just learn to follow you and trust you, you will change me from the inside out. I pray that if there's anybody here who hasn't met you for the first time, that you'll open their heart to you today. Through all this, I just pray that we'll worship and praise you. In your name I pray. Amen.